Earlier this year, I learned about some fascinating research from the global financial services firm UBS. It explores how women in long-term relationships divide up responsibility for financial decisions. Almost half of women say they defer on money matters to their spouse or partner. But would they do that if they knew that 8 in 10 women at some point in their lives, due to life circumstances, will be left to manage their own finances? I wanted to understand more, so I asked Carrie Shuffman, head of the women's segment at UBS, to join me in conversation. We talked about this persistent gender gap, which, by the way, is actually worse among millennial couples. And we also talked about the ways shared financial leadership benefits both partners in a relationship. Carrie says that we as women are more prepared than we think to be making money and investing decisions.
You do not have to be an expert in all financial matters to take a meaningful role in your own financial life. And that misperception really doesn't exist anywhere else. You know, you wouldn't read an entire legal textbook before calling a lawyer for a consultation. Or if you decided you want to focus on your health and wellness, you're not going to study anatomy before exercising, right? And so there's this weird disconnect and misperception that you need to know how to calculate a bond yield or follow the markets really closely, read financial journals regularly to be meaningfully involved in your financial life. And the reality is that you don't.
I'm Kristen Hayden, and that's what's coming up on Our Money Power. Our Money Power is a podcast for women and others like you and me who are ready to own our money conversations, invest with our values, and make money moves that matter. Join us on this journey towards wealth building in conversation with women who are financial experts, leaders in the space, and investors who share this vision that it's time to activate our money power. Carrie Shuffman, I had the pleasure of hearing you for the first time on another podcast. You were speaking with a colleague of mine, someone I really respect, Jill Fogarty Lloyd, who is a wealth manager at UBS and a huge champion of women and wealth and women investing with their values. And you were presenting really fascinating research about women and wealth that UBS recently did called Own Your Worth. And it really shined light on attitudes and where we're at right now and the huge opportunity that we are in this decade for women building wealth. And what really struck me was that even with all this knowledge that we have, this knowledge and this research, the industry is still struggling to meet needs of women.
Well, thank you, first of all, Kristen, for having me on today's podcast. It's so great to be with you and to have gotten to meet you through Jill. To answer your question in terms of why the industry may still be struggling to best meet the needs of women, my take on that really is there is so much historical and societal context that we need to consider when it comes to women and their unique financial journeys and how our industry serves women. For example, it wasn't until 1974, so less than 50 years ago, actually, that the Equal Credit Opportunity Act was passed, which made it so that women no longer needed a male cosigner when applying for credit. And societally, you know, I think we all know that financial services was traditionally a more male-dominated industry as well, which fortunately is changing rapidly. But I think the other important thing to really get into sort of this topic is that it's really important that we recognize that women are a population, not a segment. There is no one-size-fits-all approach to meeting the financial or other needs of women. Women are not a monolith. We're 51% of the population. So, you know, looking at serving women through the lens of sub-segmentation. And what I mean by that is focusing on specific demographics of women who might have similar needs or might be at a similar inflection point in their lives or have similar, you know, career considerations. I think that's really where we can meet women on their terms and meet women where they are. So that's really been something that we've really focused on, which is, you know, the unique financial journey of a woman in the C-suite might be different than a woman who's an entrepreneur, and women who are going through a divorce might have different needs than women who have been widowed. And of course, different than women who are currently married, and millennial women may have different needs than women approaching retirement. And so I think that's really been critical and will help us as an industry and has helped us as UBS to really focus on the unique needs that women have financially.
I want to hear what the surprising takeaways were for you about the research towards women and maybe their different approach than men to their financial well-being?
So, you know, as you mentioned, Kristen, we've done extensive research over the last 5 years on this topic of women in financial decision-making at UBS as part of our overall commitment to really helping women achieve greater financial and hopefully thus overall well-being. And there's a startling statistic from U.S. Census that 8 in 10 women will end up alone and solely responsible for their financial well-being in the United States, which is pretty startling.
That, by the way, Carrie, that I think that stat alone is like the wake-up call for women, that there's an 80% chance that you are going to have to make your money decisions in your lifetime.
Exactly. And that's exactly what really was sort of the catalyst for all of the research that we then did to understand, you know, why is that the case? What are the major trends that impact women maybe differently than their male counterparts on average? Again, recognizing that while women are a population, 80% of the population is a pretty significant portion of us as women who will potentially find ourselves in that position. And so we ended up conducting and publishing numerous what we call Own Your Worth reports over the last 2 years. And I would say the most surprising takeaway from all the research that we've done is that there seems to be this tremendous disconnect between people, and I mean women and men, in recognizing the importance of women's involvement in their financial lives and then what actually happens within households. And what I mean by that is the large majority of both women and men actually believe that women's financial participation is critical to achieving gender equality. But our research showed that only 1 in 5 married heterosexual couples actually share equally in those financial decisions. And among women in couples, 50% of women in heterosexual couples and 40% of women in same-sex couples actually defer the long-term financial decisions to their spouse or partner. And even among single women who are not and have not been married, a majority reported feeling less financially confident than their single male counterparts. So again, this spans different demographics and populations of women.
Wow. That is shocking that that is still happening today. What I'm hearing is, you know, at least half of women are handing over the major financial decisions in their lives at home, and particularly to their partner. What does that mean when there's a very good chance, a very probable chance in their lifetime, they're going to be responsible for controlling their own finances, maybe for the first time in their lives? I mean, this is what happened to my grandmother around age 80. I mean, and that's pretty late to have to start learning all of that. But when their partner passes away or divorce or just life circumstances change.
Yeah. And I think there's the implications, you know, for all of us. And then there's the implications for that specific person or woman that finds herself in that position. And I think the most important thing that we can take away from that statistic is that it's really critical for us to engage women from a financial services perspective early on in their lives and financial journeys, and for women to really take that seat at the money table, as we like to say, early on and before a potential life event occurs. Because to your point, and my grandmother actually went through the same thing, it can be really, really difficult, as we can all imagine or hope not to imagine, to all of a sudden be thrust into a position where you have no choice but to take the reins financially. And especially if you haven't really been involved at all until that point, you may not even know where to begin. You're facing a really steep potential learning curve. And especially in the case of sudden death or illness or difficult situation or emergency, the last thing that you want to be worrying about is getting up to speed financially on top of everything else that you'll inevitably be dealing with. And so it's really critical that we help women be prepared throughout the course of our lives. And it's not just for those, you know, what if emergencies or worst case scenarios that we can all envision or that we read about or hear about, but helping women be prepared financially also helps them to unlock the life and legacy that they ultimately desire for themselves and their loved ones. It could mean maybe you have 2 children and you find out unexpectedly you have a 3rd child on the way. And that obviously involves financial considerations or being able to buy that dream home, pay for a loved one's medical care, give back to your community or the causes that you're passionate about. And so I think that that really speaks to the importance of women's financial participation and the fact that it's never too early or too late to get involved to help sort of shape your own financial future.
Well, I think folks listening to this might be a little shaken into the reality that it would behoove all of us to stand more firmly in our money power. And obviously, if they're listening to this podcast, they're very interested in that. But what are the first steps, particularly for those that know they need to do that, but it feels very overwhelming? what's the journey? Because again, people listening to this, this is obviously they're taking an action just by the fact that they're listening to Our Money Power. It shows that they want to learn more. They recognize this is important, mm-hmm. and they're trying to figure out how to approach that. Well, what's your advice?
Well, I think, again, one of the things I always say, and I think it's so true because there's this misperception that exists in our industry more than in any other, is that you do not need to be an expert in financial matters to be meaningfully involved in your own financial life. And I think that that misperception.
Can you say that again, Carrie? I think that's a very important point for everybody to hear.
Yeah, sure. So you do not have to be an expert in all financial matters to take a meaningful role in your own financial life. And that misperception really doesn't exist anywhere else. You know, you wouldn't read an entire legal textbook before calling a lawyer for a consultation. Or if you decided you want to focus on your health and wellness, you're not going to study anatomy before exercising, right? And so there's this weird disconnect and misperception that you need to know how to calculate a bond yield or follow the markets really closely, read financial journals regularly to be meaningfully involved in your financial life. And the reality is that you don't, because as I always like to say, no one knows your life better than you do. And no one can answer better than you can some of those really important questions that actually don't even touch on the more technical pieces to get started. So questions like, who are the people that matter most to you? What are you most concerned about? What do you aspire to and want to achieve in your life? You know, what keeps you up at night? Because the reality is, you know, speaking of money power, money is so inextricably linked to so much of what we do as human beings, whether we like it or not. It helps maintain our lifestyle, the roof over our head, the food that we eat. It helps us achieve our goals. It helps us allay some of those concerns that keep us up at night. You know, we know that money can be such a constant source of stress. So why not kind of flip it and try to make money a source of sort of positive opportunity in terms of how we think about our own involvement? So that's sort of the more like psychological piece, I would say. And then in more of a tactical manner, you can also start small. You don't have to boil the ocean. You don't have to, you know, overnight or even over the course of a month or a year, become an expert in your entire financial life or go through the entire financial planning process quickly. You can do it at your own pace, and it can start by just looking at four key dimensions. So what do you have coming in, your income? What do you have going out, your spending? What do you have in terms of your financial situation, your assets versus your liabilities or what you owe, the debt that you've taken on? And just getting a handle on your financial situation, taking 15 minutes out of your week to look at if you have an employer-sponsored 401k, looked at that in a while, how is it allocated? Looking at your employee benefits, looking at whether you're, you know, maybe spending too much in certain areas, or maybe you're saving more than you thought. Could you be investing that so that your money is working for you while you're working so hard for it? So all of those things, I think, are really great ways toward financial empowerment.
Repeat back what I'm hearing, Carrie? It looks like step one, you're just saying, is really map and own your current financial situation in all the areas, right? So it sounds like a lot of people, and I mean, I know this myself, you think this is just something I'm going to look at later, particularly around the 401k or this or that, you know, I'll deal with this later. But what I'm hearing from you is part of the step one to financial empowerment is get a clear idea of your inputs and your outputs and the state of your financial world, right? So that's step one. I just really want to break this down for people. So they do that. And that's how, you know, put some time aside, decide you're going to do that within the next. I'm a big advocate of putting dates on things to say, and 30-day experiments. I'll say, like, in the next 30 days, this is what I'm committing to doing. Like, at the, you know, having a clear picture of my financial situation. And then what?
Yeah, so I think it's taking stock of your financial situation, to use a financial term. And then, you know, mapping out from there. And actually at UBS, we have a framework called Wealthway that I think can be really beneficial in terms of actually then taking those steps in the financial planning process. Wealthway really covers three key strategies, sort of shorter term, longer term, and then even beyond. We call them the three L's. So liquidity, really your needs that extend for the next maybe couple years or so, things like maintaining your lifestyle, all of your needs, maybe a few wants or wishes, but really what you need in the next couple of years. Longevity, which are really those needs that extend, let's say, 3 to 5 years out and then throughout the course of your lifetime. So that's where you would look at, okay, your retirement planning, paying for unforeseen medical costs, paying for children's college tuition, things like that would fall into that longevity strategy. And then lastly is legacy, which are really the needs that extend beyond your own, including, you know, wealth transfer considerations, giving back to the causes that you care about, passing on not just financial wealth, but also sort of your values to the people around you as well, and how you sort of think about how you align your wealth with your values. So that's, I think, another great way of sort of taking that next step toward more of a real financial planning strategy for yourself. And of course, working with a professional financial advisor can be really beneficial as well to help sort of fill in any gaps, answer any questions you have, and then really map it out on paper in a strategic and tailored way that really sort of addresses what are your goals, what are your needs, and how are you on track to meet and achieve them.
I am a big advocate of writing things down. It's the same thing, like vision boards or vision statements, but you could do this with your finances as well. I think there's a stat that said you're 40% more likely to do something just by writing it down. So I really encourage people to take that step to not only look at things, but write down what your goals are. And that resource that you mentioned, Carrie, we will also share on our resources page with this episode. I'm Kristen Hayden, and I started Our Money Power because I believe the world will be a better place when women are in positions of power and are able to access and direct financial resources. If you like what you hear and you want to hear more, follow us on your favorite podcast app. You'll find all the Our Money Power episodes you may have missed, like my conversation with former U.S. Treasurer Rosie Rios, who led the effort to get a portrait of a woman on our U.S. paper currency. And you'll get new episodes delivered directly to you. Join us on this journey of wealth building. I want to ask some bigger questions right now about just the industry in general and how it is or isn't serving the needs of women. Can you tell us what motivated UBS to launch the Own Your Worth resource?
Yeah, well, I mentioned before the goal of our Own Your Worth research is to really understand how women approach the major financial decisions within their households as a direct response to many of the trends that we're seeing that do impact women on average differently from their male counterparts. For example, we know that women control a third of the world's global wealth, and that share is only growing. And in the US, women control $11 trillion in wealth, and that's expected to increase by about $20 trillion in the next decade. So there's this tremendous opportunity. And so,
wow, that's women, like doubling. We're going to
double our wealth in the next decade. Exactly. And so, you know, there's this tremendous opportunity around women controlling more and more wealth. And with that, you know, comes tremendous responsibility and tremendous money power. But we also know, again, that women tend to outlive men on average by about 4.5-5 years. The divorce rate in the U.S. hovers just below 50%, and rates of marriage are decreasing as well, all leading to that, you know, 80% statistic that we talked about earlier of women who will find themselves solely responsible for their financial well-being. So our goal at UBS, you know, in wanting to help to address the unique financial needs of women and recognizing the importance of women's financial participation, we really wanted to understand these dynamics and hear from real women in speaking with and surveying thousands and thousands of women and men here in the US and around the world in terms of how they approach these important financial decisions in their households, with the ultimate goal of figuring out how we can encourage more women to take their seat at the financial table and supporting those women who are already at the table.
And what is the role of men in this conversation, considering that, again, that earlier statistic that what's really happening in households, particularly in heterosexual couples, is that, as you said, 50% of those decisions are being passed off to men. In what is the role of men, particularly to have more women standing in their own money power?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great question, and it's something that we talk about a lot, because this is not just a women's issue by any means. In fact, and I think I mentioned this earlier, our research has shown that both women and men, the large majority of women and men, say that women's financial participation is important and it's critical to achieving gender equality. And actually, among married heterosexual men who take the lead in their households in making those long-term financial decisions, 90%, so almost all men, told us that they wish their wives were more involved in these decisions for a variety of reasons. So it does seem that men are open to change and recognize the importance. I think it's just a question of how we help them get there. And, you know, it's also worth noting that actually among heterosexual couples, where we did hear from them that they shared equally in these financial decisions, which I mentioned earlier, our research showed only happens in 1 out of every 5 couples. Those couples actually reported feeling more confident in achieving their goals, more satisfied with their financial situation, and they said that they felt less stress about money. So the benefits of equal partnership are really significant and are clear from our research. And it really points to the fact that men have an important role to play in this as well, whether married or not, right? Whether you have children or not, all men, almost all men have, you know, some important women or an important woman in their lives. And so I think a lot of this is shedding light on this issue and helping men encourage the women in their lives to be more involved and recognize the importance of this topic.
I really like your point about the benefits of a shared partnership, of a more equal partnership. I think there could be a whole campaign on that. I also think I've heard some other research that focused on millennials. And the reason why I mention this is that I think that I thought or I wanted to believe that the next generation was much more advanced when it came to this. But it seems that for millennials and Gen Zs too, these patterns are repeating themselves, particularly in regards to controlling finances. Even though, as you're pointing out, there's going to be this massive wealth transfer to women in the decade ahead.
Yes, you're exactly right. And I think that was probably one of the most shocking things from our research is that those rates of deferral around 50%, at least among women in heterosexual couples, really cut across age, background, race and ethnicity, profession, even primary earner status. And what was really shocking is that, as you mentioned, this dynamic is not getting better with the next generation. So millennial women in couples actually deferred to their partners or spouses at higher rates than any of the prior generations.
So, whoa.
Yeah. It's really surprising, you know, so rather than breaking the status quo, our research has showed that millennials are perpetuating it, which again, I think speaks to, you know, the tremendous societal forces, historical context, falling into traditional gender roles, repeating what we saw growing up in our own homes as human beings, especially for millennials who maybe had baby boomer parents who fell into maybe more traditional gender roles in their own households. It's natural that we as human beings tend to repeat what we see. And actually the research showed that too, because millennial women who grew up with mothers who are more involved in the finances when they were children are more likely themselves to be involved as well. So there's all these different like pieces and reasons that we've explored that kind of play into, you know, what we've ultimately found in our research and this dynamic around it.
You just made an important point for the listeners who are just listening to this podcast. You are making an effort to stand into your own money power. And as Carrie pointed out from the research, that maybe your motivation can also be for the women listening to this. By you stepping into your money power, it is more likely that the young women in your lives will also have different behavior as a result of that. So you're not only just doing it for yourself, you're doing it for the younger generation as well.
Exactly. And I think that that's something that we talk about a lot in terms of, you know, our research has showed that 50% of women in couples defer the financial decisions, but that also means that there's 50% of women who don't defer and who are active participants in their household's long-term financial decisions. And I think that's where, in terms of what those women can be doing to sort of lift up other women, to lift up the next generation, sharing what they know, modeling financial partnership in their own households for, you know, whether it's children or mentees or other relatives, nieces, nephews, whomever it might be, grandchildren. I think there's tremendous power in that and in even just talking more openly about what you know and about money. You know that money is still, as we often say, one of those last taboos.
Yep.
And sometimes even just talking about, you know, this is how I think about investing, or this is something interesting that I saw that happened in the markets, or this is how I just bought a home and went through the mortgage process. If we can speak more openly about those things, I think everyone has a lot to learn and we all know more than we think we know and have a lot to share.
So with all of that, particularly speaking about this next generation and how we can make a difference with that, if you, Carrie, could go back to your younger self and have a conversation as it relates to money, what is one piece of wisdom that you would offer that younger version of yourself?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, it's interesting because even in the work that I do now, I think when I was younger and especially when I was a teenager or in college, I definitely was intimidated by the concept of investing and sort of how financial products worked, how the markets work. I was an economics major in college, so I had a decent understanding, but I didn't take any strictly finance or investing related courses for whatever reason. I think I'd say I wish I spent a little bit more time learning that earlier because it is so important and it can really provide that basis to feeling more confident in making those decisions later on. And not only do I think it would have helped me in my career in terms of my learning for joining the industry, I think it would have helped me in my own personal financial life as well, which I think speaks to the fact that this is important whether or not you work in financial services, right? It's important for everyone.
Well, it's interesting, Carrie, you're talking about, you just said you wish you had learned those things earlier. That's the knowledge side of it. But as we're learning, and as you've learned from your research as well, there's kind of two parts to this, particularly for women standing in their money power. It's not only the concrete knowledge, but then there's also just this confidence factor, mm-hmm. this mindset factor. What would you have said to yourself in terms of that aspect of your own money conversation?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, because I do think a lot of this comes down to confidence, right? This is not at all a competence issue between the genders in any way, shape, or form. In fact, financial literacy scores between genders are relatively equal. And I think telling myself, again, that misperception that it's difficult. And I think there's so much that goes into that sort of concept as well. You can look at sort of STEM, and you can look at how science and technology and math and economics are taught in schools, and differences between girls and boys, and all of those different things, I think, play into sort of how we evolve as humans. So I think I would have told myself, you can do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it might not come naturally right away, or it might not be, you know, the easiest thing, or even maybe the most interesting thing. Speaking up to, you know, I think we heard from a lot of women who told us that they're not interested in making the financial decisions in our research, but that it's really important. And sometimes the important things really require that time and focus, even if they're not as interesting or seem more complicated than maybe they really are once you start to scratch the surface.
And Carrie, in your own money story, when you were growing up, what people or experiences most shape your relationship to money?
Yeah, I think that's such a great question, because one of the other things we talk about is that money is so deeply personal to each and every one of us. And I actually think that goes back to the fact that everyone comes to the table with their own money story, their own sort of the lessons that they learned about money that they either have taken on or that they maybe tried to break from. And, you know, for me, I think for me, my earliest kind of experiences around money that I think really shaped who I am today definitely came from working and earning my own money at an early age. You know, whether it was offering to water neighbors' plants for a dollar, or selling, you know, shells or lemonade or brownies. And then eventually I spent a lot of my nights and weekends and summers babysitting through high school and college. And, you know, even on the side when I was doing internships and things like that. And I remember just feeling really good, even when I was 7 or 8 and I had $10 from selling lemonade, like feeling really good about having my own money and kind of keeping track of what I was making and maybe being able to buy things. You know, at the time it was probably buying things like candy or like chapstick, but it was that feeling of ownership. You know, even at the time I recognized that it was important. And I think now in retrospect, as an adult, I realized just how important those experiences really were in shaping my own sort of take on and values around this topic as it pertains to women's financial independence.
And didn't you reference that your grandmother also had to figure out her own financial empowerment at a later age, similar to mine?
Yes, exactly. So if I sort of shift from kind of those early growing up experiences that shaped my relationship with money and then sort of move to my adult life, you're exactly right. You know, I'm very close with my grandmother and was very close with my grandfather. And he had been sick for quite a bit of time. And unfortunately, he passed away 5 years ago. And my grandmother was 83 at the time and really had never been involved in the finances, in the investing. She really didn't know their financial situation, where the money even was, how to access it, and really fit into many of the statistics that we found in our Own Your Worth research at UBS. Although at the time, we actually hadn't even done this research yet, and I was not even in my current role. But, you know, there she was in her late 70s and then into her 80s as my grandfather got sick and eventually passed away, facing this incredibly steep learning curve around how to handle their household's finances, learning about investing, figuring out where all their money was. You know, my grandfather had been in the military, so figuring out his benefits and how they work, social security, all of these different things. And so it was really, really inspiring to see her learn and take it on. But it was also a tremendous burden and stressor for her at an already really difficult inflection point in her life.
Sure. I mean, I told you I have almost exactly the same story with my grandmother, who had never even learned to write a check. Mm-hmm. And it was in her early 80s when my grandfather passed away. Exactly what you said. And then she was so proud in the end that after she taught herself so many things that she revealed that she thought she was a better investor than my grandfather in the end, which again, I think the research shows that women are particularly good investors when they actually do.
Yeah. And I think my grandmother would say the same.
Claiming their seat and owning their money power. Thank you, Carrie, so much for this conversation. I really appreciate it. And I would say the big takeaway for me with this conversation is just to lean in right now. And, you know, we have all the research, but it's up to us not only to have agency around our own financial empowerment, but again, for the motivation of the generations that are following. If we take actions and step towards that right now, we're also going to do better for the young women that are coming up to stand in their own money power as well.
Well, thank you so much, Kristen, for having me. I'm so glad I could join you to talk about this really important topic and look forward to continued conversations.
That's it for this episode. You can get new episodes as soon as they become available and check out past episodes by following or subscribing to Our Money Power. And while you're at it, help us reach other women and allies by reviewing us wherever you get your podcasts. You can learn more about the UBS Own Your Worth research and about UBS services for women at ourmoneypower.com. I'm Kristen Hayden. Thanks for listening to Our Money Power.